The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
All right. Good morning and welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. I'm Sean Sayre here with you on a beautiful Berkshire morning in February. It is Friday, February 17th, and while this is a recorded show, life is not recorded for you, so you're listening to this for the first time, and we appreciate it this morning. We have a great guest on. We have Dina Lampiazzi. She is the city councilor for Ward 6 here in the city of Pittsfield. First time she's been on with me, although not a stranger to the Morning Drive program. She has certainly been on with Bill Sturgeon many times, and we're going to have a great conversation with her this morning, and we'll open that up right now. So good morning, Dina. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. It's good to be here with you. I can't believe for how many shows I've done, I've never been on the air with you. This is exciting.
Well, and that's one of the things why we like to do it in person in the studio. Zoom has been great, and it has allowed us to do so many things, you know, both from a city perspective and a meeting perspective, right? There are a lot of meetings that couldn't have happened during the pandemic without the aid of Zoom and without everything that we have for virtual meetings. But it's never quite the same as being across the table from somebody and seeing them and talking to them and seeing the sort of body language and their expressions. It's very different, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. For all that the pandemic was, you know, I'll forever think about how it helped us to move forward in terms of how we utilize our time and our spaces and finding new ways of connecting, right?
Yeah.
But with that, we lost a lot in the last few years, and we lost a lot of our human connection and time together. And, you know, some of us have had trouble reintegrating. I know when I walk into a large room now, I kind of cringe. And I have a little voice in the back of my head. It's getting better.
Yeah. Well, those patterns kind of get etched into your brain, right? Because you know that it was a survival thing for a long time. It's like, I see a lot of people in a room. Am I putting myself, you know, in danger? We're coming back around, I think, to the point of, okay, we can manage this. There are things we learned in the pandemic that make it okay now.
Absolutely.
Under certain circumstances.
Absolutely. Right? And on the other end, you know, it's been amazing to be able to reconnect with the community and have experiences like this.
Yeah, absolutely. So welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
And, you know, great to have you here in the studio. Lots of stuff going on in the city and, you know, all kinds of issues coming up that are getting dealt with on a city basis. You as a Ward 6 counselor, you know, being a ward counselor, sometimes a bit different than being an at-large counselor, because not only do you have to think about everything going on in the city, but you kind of have to have a hyper-focus for what's going on within the borders of your particular ward as well. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, it's where connecting with the community becomes really important, I think. You know, I try very hard to have relationships with residents throughout the ward and in different neighborhoods, and also to reach out. And, you know, just because I'm not hearing anything doesn't mean that there's nothing going on. It's not always easy to gather information that way, but it's really important to do, because just through having conversations with people, you learn about things that you may be able to help with.
Yeah.
You know, more recently, with the tragedy that happened on West Street, it highlighted how dangerous that area is.
Yeah. And that's right in the your ward, or right in your ward?
Yeah, that's right down on the border. Mm-hmm. And it's an area that I spoke about it at our meeting last night. You know, I drive through there every day, multiple times a day, to get home and to get wherever I'm going in the city, for the most part. And it's an area of tension. You know, as a pedestrian, I know that it's a very anxious area, right? You don't really feel safe.
Yeah.
As a driver coming onto West, it doesn't feel safe.
And it's interesting because it's West Street and then going on to West Street for most people, right? Which is a very odd intersection in a lot of ways. And obviously there is a lot of pedestrian traffic in and around that whole area. There's a supermarket there.
Yeah.
There are people, you know, walking a lot of places, which is a good thing as long as the infrastructure supports it well. But I think that probably, not, and you hate to say it, but it takes a tragedy sometimes to have another look at a particularly dangerous intersection. Not to say that the statistics bear that out. I don't know because I don't see the statistics. But it sure looks like maybe a second look is worthy of that area.
Yeah, I mean, even anecdotally, you know, in my experience, when you're coming off of West, that comes from the grocery store, and you're turning on to West that goes out to BCC.
Right.
The cars that are coming down from College Way from the ramp, they tend to speed up because they don't want to be cut off.
Mm.
The cars that are coming from the direction of BCC are doing the same,
mm-hmm.
right? So when you're turning on to that street, it's like it's almost like a gamble, and you have to choose when to go.
Yep.
And I think we can do better. I'm not saying we need a light there. Mm. I know a lot of people are very against that, but we do need to rethink how we use that space.
What about a roundabout? Because again, that's something people have been talking about. It's not an official plan of any kind, but that actually might make some sense there.
I actually like roundabouts. Mm. I grew up in part of the state that is not afraid of roundabouts. I learned very quickly that when you leave the Springfield area and you get out to true Western Mass,
mm-hmm.
That's not the case. They're not as popular out here.
Right.
I personally would like to see that explored more. Mm. I would be open to having that conversation with our engineers. I was really, really pleased, though, by the conversation that I had with Commissioner Morales and his focus on shortening the distance that a pedestrian is walking when they cross the street,
mm-hmm.
And also, you know, just creating a more pedestrian-friendly area.
Yeah.
And that goes along with our complete streets and spreading that throughout the entire city. And I think West Street is an obvious next place for us to start looking.
Yeah. And of course, in recent times, it wasn't the only pedestrian fatality now that has happened in Pittsfield. And the other one was way down on 7 and 20, still within, actually, it might have been in Lenox now that I think of it, it's just over the border.
Yeah.
But still a very busy area. You know, tragically, someone was walking across the street trying to get, I would imagine, to the store, something like that. I don't know what the exact circumstances are. But it does kind of highlight the idea that we are in that time now, almost a renaissance of re-examining you know, our infrastructure, and to see whether it's hospitable not only to drivers, because that's important, but also to bicyclists and to pedestrians, everyone who uses the roads and the sidewalks and bridges and crosswalks and everything. It seems like this is a time where we're really taking another hard look at that.
Yeah, we're really at a time of reframing how we look at our spaces and how we use them as a community and how we commute. And, you know, admittedly, that's not easy for everybody. If you are tied to your vehicle and, you know, you've been driving a certain way mm-hmm. for a very long time, it's difficult to imagine or to feel that the bicycle has equal rights and that they shouldn't be yielding to you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a hard conversation. And I also feel I am a cyclist. I have cyclists in my family across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this conversation with them a lot. And that is that communities often don't know how to drive with cyclists, but cyclists are often undereducated as well.
That does happen for sure, right? And that's evident sometimes when you're driving and you see someone, you know, riding a bike in the wrong direction. You know, they really should be in the same direction with the cars. And a lot of times that can throw you off as a driver, because now you're hyper aware of what's going on. And I've had these conversations with Commissioner Morales here at Morning Drive as well. And it's an ongoing conversation. It's not something that's going to be solved overnight, but it sounds like at least an awareness, an awakening, and if you will, of some of these things. And you know, the bike lane conversation on North Street in Pittsfield is really, it seems like, only the beginning of us dealing with some of that.
We're you know, it's a community conversation, and it's about community education. I think there was recently, we're still discussing it, but a petition to put bike lanes on the ballot.
Right.
And that's something that I personally don't don't support. You know, we have come so far with the redesign that to turn back now, it would feel like we're spinning our wheels, we're wasting resources, when in reality we can just look at what's still not working and see that be improved.
Well, I'd almost take a step back from that and say, you know, what are the types of decisions that a city makes that are reasonable to put on a ballot for all voters to weigh in on, whether it's a binding decision or a non-binding decision? And at what point do you tip the scales into saying, well, then why do we have a city council, a representative form of government? Why do we have a mayor, and why do we have an administration and department heads to make decisions on our behalf? Why don't we just let every decision be something that the voters can do? So where is that line? And to this one, I mean, I'll have my own opinion on it, but I'd like to know what yours is. And obviously it's that this one doesn't belong on the voter's ballot. What are the kinds of things that might belong on the voter's ballot?
I mean, there are so many large community conversations that I think it could be debated if they belong on the ballot. But at its essence, it can't be things that essentially affect the rights and accessibility of those who are vulnerable, right? Mm-hmm. Historically, we've seen this in different areas of social rights and things like that. But really, like, there was a speaker last night that really caught my attention when they made this point, and it was talking about how we are trying to build a city that is accessible to everybody, and taking into account all of these different ways of transportation. And when you think about that, there's both physical mobility issues of the individual that may lead them to commute one way or the other, and maybe cognitive. And then there's also financial reasons why somebody may commute one way or the other. And then on the other end of the spectrum, there's I would say environmental awareness and social awareness of why people make these decisions, right? But the most fundamental of somebody's rights as an individual to get from point A to point B safely, we can't put that on the ballot.
Well, I thought what was interesting about the Tuesday night city council meeting is that the open mic segment, which you never know what you're going to get from the open mic, right? Depends on what's on the agenda for the evening for the city council. But I noticed sort of a concerted effort among people who are bicyclists and who you know, use the bike lanes in North Street. This was really the first meeting I had seen where they came out in force and they said, no, this was done right. And in fact, we want to keep it that way and we don't want to have it on the ballot. That was really the first time I saw that effort come forward. And that was an interesting voice to hear, because a lot of times at the meetings and depending on the agenda items, you'll only hear the negative about whether that was done correctly. So I find that very interesting to know that there are two sides and how that's going to go down.
I was not expecting that last night when I walked into the room and saw how full it was. I was thinking about the agenda and I was like, okay, what item is this about? I noticed some faces. I had an idea. I didn't realize that they were all there for the same thing. So there were new faces to me. But I was really happy to see them, because as a ward counselor, you know, I after my vote 2 weeks ago, I received some messages, very few. Why did you vote this way? I don't want the bike lanes. I want to get rid of them. We should have it on ballot. I expect it differently from you.
Interesting.
Right? I had only two messages like that. I had at least seven messages of thank you. These are the reasons why I support it. And I'll also say that none of those messages came from anybody in that room last night. So these were different residents. So when I walked in and they started speaking, and I was so happy, because it can become difficult to defend the bike lanes to people who aren't having conversations with those who, or at least the street design. I'm going to call it the street design, because it's really about the street design. It's not about the bike lanes. To me, it's not, at least. It's difficult to defend when these people aren't having the same conversations. And for those who watch, I really hope they listened. There was one speaker, Ms. Mahoney, who's a great member of our community. I see her at almost everything. And she talked about how it was difficult her first time and it got better. And at her older age, she really likes them. And this was something that it was great to hear her say that in a public forum, because we're not hearing enough of that.
Yeah. Change is certainly hard. And when something has been a particular way a long time, there tends to be a bit of resistance to changing anything because it's easier. You're just used to it. You know it. But it doesn't mean that there aren't problems, right? And yeah. the problems, I think, the even bigger problems with North Street weren't so much that there was a lack of a bike lane. And again, my perspective might be different if I was more of a bicyclist and was trying to use that. But I thought that the sort of raceway mentality of North Street was getting bad, where you had the two lanes, and if you were frustrated or upset with someone who was going too slow down that lane, you had an option. You could step on the gas, you could gun it, go around them, and who knows what's going to happen when you do that, right? Because there's a lot of other things going on the street. But that was very common of just racing and passing, you know, very, very quickly. So this, in a way, does it completely eliminate it? Probably not. But does it discourage that kind of behavior by having one lane down that street? Probably, right?
Yeah, I mean, I lived on North Street for a number of years, I think almost a full decade. I've worked on North Street. I spend much of my time on North Street, walking North Street, driving North Street. And the difference that I see since these changes have been implemented, and even the arc of that implementation and the progress that we've made over since 2021, it does feel safer. You know, it feels more like a welcoming community space. But again, to your point, change is hard. And when people view that as a throughway to get from point A to B, that's, I think, where part of our clash is.
Yeah. And of course, you know, Pittsfield also has two other routes that allow you to get from A to B. Center and Seymour Street is one. And First Street, which is the official Route 7, is the other. And there have been some anecdotal discussions about what there's more traffic on those routes now and less traffic on North Street. And that might actually be what you need to do, right? Because those streets are designed to take the traffic and to get them through, where you might not be stopping for something on North Street. And let's face it, the merchants and the vendors and restaurants and places like that on North Street also want traffic and they want people to stop, but maybe that needs to be more intentional. And we're speaking, by the way, with City Councilor for Ward 6, Dina Lampiazzi, on Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR. What about the diagonal parking proposal that was put forward by Downtown Pittsfield? Because there's another sort of wrench in the works, if you will. It might be very interesting. And if that's something that the downtown merchants want, because that will help them, you know, get people in and out of their stores, that might be a really good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not opposed to it. I would like the engineers to look into it and to do what they do with these things. I like that they're coming to the table and putting forward their suggestions about how to make the downtown work better for them. When I think about other communities that I visit and what they've done with their downtowns, I will speak honestly that some of those with diagonal parking give me more anxiety when I'm pulling in and pulling out. But I'm not going to fight it. You know, at this point, I want to know more. I want to see the drops. I want to hear what's possible.
Yeah, and a couple other communities nearby us have those in place. North Adams has diagonal parking on Main Street. Lee certainly does in their downtown in a certain section, not the entire downtown, but in some places. And it seems like it does work in those places. So it could work in Pittsfield.
I absolutely agree with that. And, you know, when I think about North Street and our downtown corridor, I don't so much think about what's happening now, though right now it's a work in progress, right? We have to continue this conversation, and there's a push and pull with this administration and whatever administration we have in the future of getting these things done, right? But more than anything, it's a conversation about where do we want to go and where is our city headed and what is it going to look like in 20 years? And in 20 years, will we be setting up our local infrastructure for the economy that we want, right? And again, like I go back to the cities and the communities that I visit. And if you think about somewhere like East Hartford, it's a great downtown. There are a lot of shops. And I think places like that we can use as inspiration and use that to compare of like, is it okay to divert traffic away from the main street that we want people to go shopping in? Mm-hmm. And the answer is yes. Mm. It works there. People are walking around. They're doing their thing. Mm-hmm. And that's because when you go to that area, you know you're going there to shop. You're not going there to just get to the other side of town or to get to Lanesboro or something, you know?
Yep.
It's a destination.
Right.
And we want to build that.
Yeah. So interesting process that you have in the city council of making something like a ballot question happen. And one of the things that happened on the Tuesday night city council meeting was the dreaded charter objection brought forward by Councillor Persip.
Yeah.
And so that came out of left field. I didn't expect that. But what that was a product of, it looked like, was that there was some confusion over what the actual wording was going to be on the question, right? And mm-hmm. so that seems to be a fairly good use of the charter objection. If you don't know what you're voting on or there's some confusion about that, how about take 2 weeks off and figure it out and bring it back?
Yeah. I wasn't expecting it. It was kind of rolling around in the back of my mind.
Like the Spanish Inquisition.
And
not expecting it.
And I was happy that he did it. I fully supported it. There have been times while I've been on the council that I have really disagreed with how the charter objection has been used. Mm-hmm. I think it's been abused mm-hmm. in some cases. This was one where it was legitimately a point of confusion. Mm. And I do feel that regardless of personal feelings on the topic, voting in that state is a liability.
Mm.
We all need to be very clear about what we're getting into and what we're saying yes and no to.
Yeah.
The language that was put before us, it's confusing.
Mm. And so that has to go through several steps and stages before it ever makes its way onto a ballot, right? That's what the charter says that has to happen at this point. Is that there's need to be so many signatures, and somebody needs to put it forward. It goes to the city council or to the city solicitor to make sure that the language is legal, you know, that actually if someone was voting yes or no on something that could be implemented, all those steps have to happen before anything gets on the ballot. And that's a reasonable procedure.
Yes, yes. There is a difference, though, of if it goes through community petition, which requires, I don't know how many signatures, but that's somewhat of a more laborious process.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, that would bypass the city council.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that would bypass the city council. Mm-hmm. And what Councillor Kalinowski has attempted to do is to put it through the city council mm-hmm. to get it on the ballot.
Okay.
There is debate about whether or not at the last meeting we voted to put it on the ballot, or it was voted for to go on the ballot or not, and what the legalese are around that. I know several of us have rewatched the meeting, and there's still some back and forth. And I think at this point, it's important that we just let the attorneys and those that are much more intimate with this process assess what's going on and give us an update.
Yep.
Yeah.
So stay tuned, basically, on that issue. It will come back again at the end of February, probably, although that agenda hasn't been published yet, but it does seem like that's generally something that happens after a charter objection, is that it can be placed on the future, the next meeting's agenda.
I expect for it to be picked up at the next meeting.
Lots of other stuff going on, obviously, you know, bike lanes and street layout and roundabouts and all kinds of good stuff. And we do have good conversations with the commissioner about those things, but obviously important for ward councilors as well to be up on that kind of stuff. Some of the other things that came up this past week at the city council meeting, economic development issue. There was a proposal to spend $250,000 out of the economic development fund, previously known as the GE Economic Development Fund. We kind of dropped that, but we all know what it was from. It was it was from the $10 million that was granted during the process back in 1999-2000, which I guess there's still some money left in that. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about giving this money, you know, with some strings attached to a growing company in Pittsfield for expansion? EMA, I think, was the name of the company.
EMA is the company. I spoke on this last night, and I feel strongly that when we're using this money to invest in economic development, as the fund is called, and it needs to be companies that are going to help us to grow here in Pittsfield. And one of the things that I see about EMA is I really respect how humbly they have grown. They came here, they started very small, and they showed us since their last partnership with us, well, continued partnership, but last time they received funds, that they're a good partner, right? They pay the money back. Mm. They're growing. The people that come to work for them tend to live in Pittsfield. I believe all of their employees live in Pittsfield. I could be incorrect. There might be a couple that don't, but I think all of them do. Mm. These are people with good paying jobs that are buying homes, right? So if they're going to continue to grow here, there's another aspect of this too that I've been thinking a lot about, and that's the diversification of our local economy. Mm. You know, when General Electric moved, I hope what we all learned is that we need to diversify our economy. We can't put all of our eggs in one basket. We cannot expect for one super company to come and employ most of our residents.
Yeah, right? That seems like a very 19th, 20th century type of thing, right? To be a company town, to be one company town.
It's dangerous.
Yeah, well, certainly. And, you know, in 1991, GE showed us why that's dangerous.
Yeah, and you know, I often hear there are some pockets of the city where the conversation is, we just need GE to come back. We need another company like that to come back. I disagree. Mm. That would be terrible. Mm-hmm. I don't want that for my family.
Yeah.
My spouse and I want to stay in Pittsfield, and I want to see our economy continue to grow and to be stable.
Yeah.
And the way we do that is that we have a diversity in the type of businesses we have and also in the size, right? And the thing about EMA that is really attractive to me is the space that they work in of aeroscience or space science. I don't even know what we're supposed to be calling it, but it makes sense what they do, and they are doing interesting work, and they're doing that here, and it's for the scientists to do. but the idea that they could attract other companies, right? So,
because you start off with one, and suddenly you have other companies come in and say, "Well, they're here, they're doing this. Maybe we could, you know, work off of them." And before you know it, you have a cluster of companies. And I think of the way that the plastics industry kind of grew up around GE Plastics at the time in Pittsfield, and how many companies, small companies, and when I say small, I mean you're still talking, you know, dozens of jobs in a lot of ways, who popped out of that and are still making, you know, products and services right here in Pittsfield because of those early ventures into plastics and molding, mold making, tool making, all those kinds of things.
Absolutely. And we're seeing that now. You know, the city council approved a TIF a couple years ago for another, it might have been a couple years ago now, for another company that makes plastics that go to space. I think it was Eclipse that they do. So we are seeing a small cluster happen here, and I don't want to shut that down. I want to see that flourish, and you know, particularly when a company has shown us that they're a good community partner and business partner, we need to foster those relationships. I would hate to see us go down a road of misusing funds to help, and I mean this respectfully, but to help failing companies prolong their failure. We have to speak honestly about that, what that means. Giving bailouts to the wrong type of company is just prolonging a hurt that is inevitable.
Yeah.
And if we're going to stabilize our economy and to grow it, we need to be very tactful.
What do you think of the role of the BIC in growing these companies for Pittsfield and for Berkshire County? How important is that? Because obviously EMA is one of those companies that started there, and I don't know exactly what their status is now, if they're still located there or if they're starting to expand into other spaces, but it seems like not a bad thing to have, right?
Yeah, my understanding is that they have a new office on West Street, and then they also have different work being done at the BIC, I believe, or the intention is to continue doing something separate there. I'm a little foggy on that specifically, but I do know they have a space on West Street. And I think that the BIC is a great resource for our community. You know, we've seen the partnership with places like UMass and getting involved with schools in New York. And we're starting to create this hub here in Pittsfield and in the Berkshires. And it's not going to happen overnight. Every company that moves in there is not going to be the huge success that we hope it to be. Mm-hmm. That's the nature of business, right? But for the good that can come out of it, I really think that the BIC has been a great investment for the city.
Yeah. And of course, Pittsfield having such a great history in manufacturing and being sort of the county seat for that, the industrial seat, if you will, of Berkshire County. As much as we have gotten into travel, tourism, culture, which are all very important for the Berkshires, and I think, you know, that's been a really good thing for Pittsfield to share in some of that wealth, if you will, where some of the other communities in Berkshire County kind of had a corner on that market for a long time. Pittsfield's been sharing in that now, and I think it's been very good. We could never completely, you know, disconnect ourselves from that manufacturing and industrial history. It's really seems to be an important and core part of what our economy should be.
Yeah, it's a matter of staying true to our roots here. And also, again, going back to the idea of a diverse economy and making sure that we have revenue streams from all different directions and that we are finding ways to employ all different types of residents, all different education levels, all different interest levels.
Got to keep people here, too. Yes. So Dina Lampiazzi is our guest here this morning on Morning Drive. It's Friday, February 17th, and glad to have you along. We are going to take that top of the hour break right now that we always do our little station identification and thank our underwriters and a couple of other things. So we'll be right back after this. Stick around. Morning Drive will return.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR-FM.
Oh, yes! 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
Missed an episode of your favorite show? Have no fear, because we have podcasts. Type in WTBRFM.com/podcast on your favorite browser and search for your favorite show. It's that simple.
Hey, this is Mike Pezzo. Remember those tunes your parents told you to turn down? Better yet, remember those tunes your grandparents told your parents to turn down? Well, on Mike's Amazing Music and Oldies show, you'll hear sometimes oldies, sometimes blues, sometimes local performers, and a lot of rock on Berkshire County's only rock station, 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, Thursdays at noon. Tune in and be entertained and educated.
WTBR-FM is listener-supported radio. That means we depend on your donations to keep the station on the air. All the local content and the music you love requires your support. You can make your donation today at WTBRFM.com by calling 445-4234 or stopping by our studio at 4 Federico Drive in Pittsfield. You'll be glad you did. Pittsfield Community Radio, for the love of radio.
The Berkshire Coalition for Suicide Prevention recognizes that everyone has a role at saving lives. Through ongoing discussion and education, we may be able to recognize the warning signs and understand how to confidently address the subject of suicide in order to save lives. It takes just one person to offer hope and save a life. Contact the Berkshire Coalition for Suicide Prevention at berkshirecoalition.org for more information.
Support for this public service announcement comes from Berkshire Community College and Park Square Productions. Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is community. And from County Ambulance, providing quality, professional, efficient medical care and medical transportation services to the citizens of Berkshire County. Online at countyamb.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back, WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. I'm Sean Sayre, glad to be here with you and have you here with us this morning. It's Friday, February 17th, and this is a recorded show for Morning Drive, but it's live for you, and that's what we're going to treat it as. We're going to give you our live recorded show this morning. So thank you here for being along with us. Our guest this morning, Dina Lampiazzi, she is the city councilor here in Pittsfield for Ward 6. And we're having a great conversation around lots of different issues that are making their way onto city council agendas. And of course, looking forward toward the budget season that's coming up. And of course, the election season, which is just around the corner, it seems like. Whenever we get to February or March of an election season, we start thinking about people taking out papers for their reelection or for challenging someone. So that's all coming in April. But right now, I guess we get a little bit of a reprieve from that. So we were talking about economic development. Let's talk about free cash, because that is a topic that has come up several times in the last couple of meetings. The city is kind of lucky at this moment to have free cash to debate what to do with it. There are a lot of budgets I've seen over the years where there's very little free cash. So first of all, tell us what free cash is for people listening. It isn't free, and it really isn't really cash either, is it?
So I would say the simple way of describing it is that it's money that has not yet been dedicated to a specific line item or expense that the city has. Right. So we have the opportunity to, I would say, invest that money in different areas of our city or different parts of our budget.
So this is revenue that was collected.
Right.
And whether it was in a budget line item that was not spent, right? Or if it just hasn't been allocated, you had a better year of tax revenues than was planned. That would all be qualified as at some point coming into this free cash lump.
So it's the equivalent of your business or your home economy. At the end of the year, you didn't spend the money that you had budgeted to spend in different areas. Mm-hmm. So what do you do with that money? Do you go on vacation or do you get a new roof? Big decisions.
Or do you put some in a savings account for those rainy days, right?
Right,
right. And that is a stabilization account. That's something that the city has. And that means a lot of things, not only for, you know, when you fall on hard times and you need to, you know, make up the difference from revenues that maybe you were expecting that would come in that didn't come in that particular year. I know it's been a while since the city has had to deal with that, but it does happen. You know, and then there are also things like the bonding agencies and the places that loan the city money. They like to look at that stabilization account, right, and say, what kind of fiscal shape is our city in? So that's really important.
It's incredibly important. And, you know, I think it's easy in these discussions to fall into the trap of just wanting to throw the money in a direction that some think will lower their tax rate, right? I think it's important that we use that money wisely and that we invest it in parts of our city that are going to have a prolonged improvement, right? So the Public Works Stabilization Fund, that's an area that our city is constantly calling our councilors about, calling the mayor's office about, screaming about that we need to do better. And that's an area that I really do support funding that stabilization account.
And that covers all kinds of things, right? From repair of roads and bridges all the way up to water and sewer improvements and things like that. So those are things I'm sure as a ward councilor you're hearing about on a regular basis.
Absolutely. And when we look, you know, I try really hard to be a good co-counselor to others and think about, you know, how do we meet in the middle of what your priorities are in your ward and what mine are in my ward and how can we compromise, right? If Patrick Cavey and I, we talk a lot about our roads and different things. I remember at the last season, we were kind of comparing notes on what streets were going to be paved in our wards. And it wasn't, and I've had this conversation with other counselors. It's not adversarial. It's more of, well, this is a high priority for me. What are you going to ask for? And trying to think how the department's going to think and how can we all make our requests in a way that the city can meet it, right? The reality is we have a lot more work to do than what we have money for right now.
Which I think is probably a regular situation.
That is a very regular situation.
If we had all, you know, no cares about money at all, every road would be perfectly paved every single year and everything would be in great shape. It's just not a practical reality.
It's not a practical reality, but for the person that says, you know, I drive to this town and all of their roads are perfect. I drive to this community and I don't have these issues there, right? This is a stabilization fund that pique your interest.
Yeah, interesting. So And that was that a vote on the Tuesday night city council meeting, or is that something that went to finance? I think it went to finance.
Went to finance, yeah.
And again, that's part of the procedure, and people don't know if they're new to watching city council meetings or any of the subcommittee, which, you know, maybe the people who are into it and really watching understand, but it's also sometimes important to let people know that even though it's on a city council agenda, it usually takes a couple steps before a decision is made, a vote is taken on something like this. And that's, you know, by design, so that it can get a full amount of discussion before it comes back for a vote, right?
Yeah, subcommittee is a great place for issues to be really fleshed out. Mm. Sometimes you get more done with fewer people at the table. It's important to have a diversity of thought at the table, mm-hmm. but having 11 people working on an issue is sometimes not as productive.
Yeah.
And when it comes back to full council, we're able to then have a more elevated conversation mm-hmm. with those who are not in subcommittee joining in. And I mm-hmm. find it to be a great process. Mm-hmm.
And of course, you also have a preliminary vote out of the committee, right? So you know what the committee has recommended. And there were a couple of those at the Tuesday night city council meeting where, you know, the vote was 0-5 against recommending something. It came back to the city council. And then there was, I believe, a tabling or a filing. I forget what it was, but very interesting process to see how, you know, the recommendations sometimes carry some weight for the rest of the city council. And then sometimes the city council can come back and say, well, we appreciate that, but we're gonna vote this way anyway.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And usually I think councilors try to do a good job of taking mic time to explain why they're voting the way they do. Mm-hmm. But it is interesting to watch that process go through and to see, you know, how people fall in their decisions. You mentioned the importance of bonding and mm-hmm. you know, that's an area that, again, it goes to our long-term planning, and it matters how our bond rating mm-hmm. is situated. And we want to make sure that we have a good bond rating, and we can't take things for granted. And that's, again, where it's an unpopular decision sometimes mm-hmm. to reserve money in that way, but it's something that we have to do.
Mm. Well, I can certainly see this particular year is a difficult one as far as what ordinary residents are facing. And, you know, this past year with the revaluation of homes, for example, people saw a kind of a sizable increase in their taxes, even though the tax rate itself went down. Pretty much everyone's value of their houses went way up, which again is something out of the control of the city of Pittsfield. That's what homes are worth now. And so there are some people who saw a very sizable increase in their taxes. So when it comes to seeing a large pot of free cash, they say, well, maybe we should have some of that back. And that's a very understandable thing that people would ask for at this time. And, of course, with all the inflation and the price of eggs and, you know, where do I stop?
it's been a really difficult year for that. You know, when I speak to retired residents who have incomes that are staying the same, but everything's getting more expensive, it's really difficult. And the other end of the spectrum, too, is home ownership for younger people is down significantly, not just in our area, across the country, but part of that is because of how expensive it is to live now. You know, in a household like mine, you have two people with student loans who are paying a mortgage that, in addition to all of these city taxes, it's not easy.
Right.
So I think all age groups that are in home ownership have struggles that are unique to where they are in life. And some of this is new to the American economy.
Right.
It's a difficult time. The increase was a blow to most of us.
Yeah, historically, it's tough for younger people to sort of start a family, get a home, you know, all the things that you need to do that maybe a generation or two before, it was just common. It was like, okay, you're 25, this is what you're going to be doing. Oh, you're married now, you're 30, you're 35, okay, you should have a house, you know, all that stuff. It isn't that simple anymore because of all these pressures, mostly financial pressures, but, you know, student loans you mentioned, that's a big deal for a lot of people that, you know, you may not have thought about how impactful that is as far as starting a family or buying a home.
Right, absolutely.
Lots of pressures.
Absolutely. And you know, my feeling has always been that if we were going to apply money to lower the tax burden on people, it has to be significant enough across the board that it's making a difference, right? To when you spread the money across the entire city, what kind of impact are we making on a household versus if we put the money somewhere else, what are the long-term benefits for that household in the city? Mm-hmm. You know, you don't often think about how your taxes are benefiting you in the future in the same way as when you look at city budgeting.
Yeah, so short-term versus long-term thinking as well.
Yeah.
We're speaking with the city councilor for Ward 6 here in the city of Pittsfield, Dina Lampiazzi. This is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM, and we thank you for listening this morning. A couple other things that are hitting the agendas, permitting of chickens. And so I find that to be kind of an odd item, but very important for some people. And now, I always say it, with the price of eggs, maybe they weren't crazy after all, that you want to have chickens, and it's you know, in a residential area, and that's where some of the city permitting is having a second look at that, let's say, right? That there is a special permit that's involved with the zoning board, and mm-hmm. it's a kind of a cumbersome process. So talk to us about where this might head.
I was really happy to see this come forward. Mm. Chickens are something that I've thought about for a little while, actually. I've lived in Boston. I've lived in other places where it's more densely populated, and yet chickens are more prevalent. Mm. And I never witnessed it to be a problem. I'm sure there are places where it can be an issue. Mm. That's here nor there. But here in Pittsfield, as a right-to-farm community, and especially with how much space we have in comparison to somewhere like downtown Boston.
Mm, sure.
The idea that more people aren't able to have chickens is a tough one for me.
What would be the downside of it? Is it a health issue? Is it a noise issue?
I think there's not so much noise because the hens don't make the sound.
Right. It's the rooster.
The rooster makes the sound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we have a rooster
tell
nearby.
I don't have chickens.
No, I know. We have a rooster nearby my house, and we've actually just gotten used to it. It's kind of you know, like, oh, I'm home, I can hear the rooster.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't bother us.
We had one on Outer West Street, and there was a point when I had residents from all different points calling, and we were trying to pinpoint where this rooster was. Mm. And it took many early mornings of me taking car rides that I honestly didn't want to be taking with my windows down to find where this rooster was. But it got addressed.
Things you do as a city councilor. Driving around listening for a rooster.
I should have started a Facebook Live or something. But you know, I do think that so we have to make sure that we have sanitary codes that are in place, that we have the workforce to be able to make sure that they're being followed, all of that. Mm-hmm. But the benefits of allowing our residents to create their own food, I think, is a power that, especially in these economic times, we owe it to them to give to the residents.
Yeah.
And part of what's made it so difficult, really, is the funding structure behind it and special permitting and how expensive that is. Mm. By the time
it's cumbersome too, right? It's expensive and it's multi steps. Is it really necessary
right.
to have all that?
No, yeah. I really don't think so. I think you should be able to notify the city that you're going to have some chickens. Mm-hmm. If there's a fee, it should be very affordable.
Sort of like a dog license fee.
Like a dog license. Mm-hmm. It should not be triple digits, I don't think. Mm-hmm. I think it should be double digits, maybe single digits. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Something more affordable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, families that want to have chickens, I think that's a great experience for the kids to learn how to produce their own food. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of benefits from different areas of life and culture that can come from it.
Yeah. So that hasn't been resolved yet, but what's the procedure and the process for that? Where does it stand? Do we know?
No, last night I think we approved it last night.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
But does it have to go to ordinances and rules? Is there something?
We've been in O&R for quite some time.
Okay. And you're on the O&R committee?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been in O&R for quite some time. I'm on O&R. We've had a long back and forth with Attorney Pagnotta and Councillor Kalinowski and the resident that brought it forward. Mm-hmm. It's been a very productive conversation. We brought the health department in on it, and I feel that we've had ample time to get us to a place where we...
So at some point, though, there will be sort of a procedure that everyone understands and knows, and it'll be sort of a level, okay, I want to have chickens in my backyard. What do I have to do? Here's the menu. Excuse the pun. It's not a menu. But, you know, I have to do this first, then that next, then I have to pay this, then I can do this, and I have to, you know, where will that process be?
Yes. Is that a question?
No. where will people go to do that?
In an ideal world, you can go to the city browser, type in chickens, and Hotlink's going to come up. You're going to click it, and there's going to be a couple different options, and there's going to be one that has steps one through whatever, and maybe even an online form to get you started. Hmm. You know, we've seen that in other parts of the city, and I think, you know, the more we can do to modernize our city and to make things more accessible, the more compliance we're going to have, too. Yeah.
Is there an effort right now to sort of make permitting for things a bit more straightforward or easier to get done? And chickens, I think, is just one of those things. But there's lots of things that you have to go to your city for to get a permit to do, whether it's building permits or, you know, for businesses or health or whatever else. Are those things that need to be straight lined or... you know, made better?
We've seen some of it become more accessible in recent years. You know, you can license your dog online now, and there's different things that are easier to do. Hmm. And I think across the city, there's been concerted effort to do that where possible. Hmm. Absolutely.
Very good. We're speaking with Dina Lampiazzi. She is the city councilor for Ward 6 here in the city of Pittsfield. This is Morning Drive, and thanks for being here today. Some of the other issues, the police body cameras seems to be something where it's still not quite there. There's been a lot of give and take, push and pull to make this work. There was some discussion among police unions about how it's going to work and things like that. Where do we stand with that? And some of that came up at the Tuesday night city council meeting as well.
So last night we voted to move forward with a contract with the company that Chief Wynn has chosen. Mm-hmm. So right now we're kind of at a standstill until that contract is essentially turned from a pilot to an effective contract. And then at that point, we'll see some action. There's some additional equipment that we will need to get and install and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I really have to hand it to Chief Wynn for his work on this. Mm.
It's been a long time, right?
It's been a long time. And I recognize that and that in the community and for some of us on the council, it's been frustrating. When we said we wanted it the first time, we wanted it then. We wanted it immediately. We wanted it to happen faster than it did, mm-hmm. right?
Events of last year with Miguel Estrella, that certainly put a point on it as to say, okay, this really needs to happen now. We need to have body cameras to be able to, you know, tragic circumstances we hope never happen again, but, you know, we have to be realistic that these things are happening. How much did that influence, you know, some of this process?
After the tragedy of what happened to Miguel Estrella, it set a fire in our community that showed us that we're not just activated about national issues and we're afraid of it happening here. Mm. It showed us that it can happen here. Mm-hmm. It is happening here. Actively at the time, and we needed to have more information, mm-hmm. right? And there's some debate about if cameras benefit the potential victim,
right.
or somebody who is in uniform that acted inappropriately.
They're not the be-all, end-all, right?
They're not the be-all, end-all, but there is, to my point about Chief Wynn, though, I'm happy to see that he took it slowly. Mm-hmm. I believe that he made the right choice, and he worked to find a way through with the unions, mm-hmm. that was going to be effective, right? There were several points through the process where, you know, it was stalled because of unions, and there are different reasons why we couldn't move forward. And for legal reasons, I think it's really important that we do these things slowly, mm-hmm. and methodically, so that once we set something in place, it is fail-proof, and we have our systems kind of codified, right? The last thing that we want to have happen is get knee-deep into something and find out that something's not working right or we have to turn back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so again, long-term process. A lot of people want to see it happen yesterday. It can't happen yesterday, but it is in process. And one thing that I also noticed at the Tuesday night city council meeting was that there are also going to be cameras in cruisers, although that may not happen as quickly as the body cameras on the officers, right?
Yes. So that touches on what I had mentioned about equipment that we have to wait for.
Yeah.
So the cruiser cameras are going to take a little bit more time. Chief Wynn wasn't able to give us an exact timeline, but he did say he doesn't expect it to be months. Hmm. He would expect more like weeks. There are some supply chain concerns. Mm-hmm. But even that, weeks for how far we've come is really promising, and it's good to see that we're making progress on this.
Yeah, and we wouldn't be the first Berkshire community to have body cameras. I think Great Barrington was the one that started it, but we're still, I think, in the minority in terms of all the communities that have police departments, that not all of them have gone in and taken this step yet. So it's still kind of, you know, in the beginning, not for maybe the national standards, because there are a lot more body cameras out there than there are in Berkshire County. But it does seem like we're making some progress.
I think, another way of looking at it is across the Commonwealth, there are communities that I would say are ones that in some ways are good to model mm-hmm. oneself after, and they're doing certain things really well. Hmm. And some of those communities already have body cams.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, it's not across the Commonwealth, mm. and we are kind of on the forefront. We're not the first,
mm-hmm.
But we're well positioned right now, and it's good that it's going to be happening.
Yeah, it'll be a learning process for sure once it happens.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
And of course, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the looming upcoming budget season, which again seems a bit premature here in February. But this is the time, right, when it's important to get the information from your constituents of what priorities they might put on certain things that we should be looking at for, I guess, would be fiscal 24, right? Starting in July 1st.
I want to hear from residents.
Hmm.
There's two things to this. Often we take a vote on something and it hits the newspaper 5 days later. And then I get an email from somebody 2 days after that. And they say, I really agree with this. I really don't agree with this. Did you ever consider that? Or a phone call. And I always wish that person had reached out to me sooner and not days after the vote.
Mm.
You know, I want to hear from you. I want to have a give and take conversation. I'm interested in sharing with you where my thoughts are and to hear why we may agree or disagree.
Yeah.
Right. And on most issues, I'm open. mm-hmm. On most issues, if I hear from enough residents that have compelling arguments, I can be swayed,
mm-hmm.
right? It's all about collecting information from people with different experiences to me.
Yeah.
And particularly when it comes to budgets, it's common for residents to become fired up when they read about what happened in the budget hearing. But I want to hear from you before then, because in that room, when we're taking those votes, it's based on the information that we have then.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on the independent research that we've done. It's based on the experience we have as counselors and on conversations that we've had with residents.
Well, it's interesting because sometimes those issues don't come to the fore or maybe hit people's personal radar until they make a news story or they come up at a city council meeting, and suddenly then it sort of starts to take shape, right? And people pile on and say, oh, well, how do I feel about that? Maybe they haven't thought about how they feel about it until it's an issue. So it's a little bit of chicken or egg, not to use a pun from the previous discussion we had before.
Well used. I agree with you on that. And to be fair to residents, that is the nature of the process. And I understand that.
Yeah. What are some of the priorities you have right now or you're thinking of for next year for Ward 6 or for the city at large? What are the things that are looming in your mind that might have to take some priorities for this budget year?
Infrastructure.
Yeah.
Infrastructure is always very high for me.
Mm.
We can't allow our community to fall apart. We have to repair things.
Mm.
When difficult times come, to me, that's not a time to ignore infrastructure. That's a time to focus on infrastructure.
Mm.
Because if we fall too far behind, we will never get ahead.
Yeah.
And it is my view that we're in a dangerous place right now.
Mm.
And that can apply to, you know, everything from roads and sewers to water to bridges to, like, all of it, right? Yeah.
Public buildings.
Public buildings. And, you know, and I also want to make sure that we are appropriately funding our departments that we expect to do all of this work for us. Mm. We need to make sure that departments have the equipment and the bodies that they need to do the work that we expect of them.
Yeah, you got to have both of those things, equipment and bodies, and the right bodies, right? You have to keep people who are doing great work for the city as well, and you don't want to lose people, so you have to pay them. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff like that, especially in the last couple of years where people have been reassessing some of their own priorities, their personal priorities in life. It's hard sometimes to hang on to people who, you know, you really need to make the city run.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh. You know, and just the Berkshire Eagle, I will say, one of the things they do great is at the beginning of budgets, they often, are we going out?
Yeah. All right. I'm playing you out, just like the Oscars, but go ahead, finish your thought.
As I was going to say, they kind of put out a menu of what's to come in the schedule. And I just want to remind residents to look for that as we head toward, so that they can reach out and talk to us about what's on their mind.
That's a great thought. And how do they reach you, Dina Lampiazzi, with their comments and questions for this budget season, for anything in Ward 6?
DLampiazzi at cityofpittsfield.org. And the easiest way is my phone, 413-433-8654.
All right. There you have it. Thanks so much for being here this morning. It's been great talking to you, and we appreciate it. Everybody have a great weekend out there, and we will see you again next week. Take care.